I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning and welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. Here weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock. This is where you will find a safe space for independent thought. Beholden to no party, no politician. And I'm going to certainly prove that today as we take a look at the insane political world we are currently inhabiting. The world did not end this weekend, so it's back to the calculators for the end of the world people. You know, this is... talked about this just briefly at the end of the show on Friday. Apparently, some people had come out and said that the calculations for the end of the world for, it was December, what was it, December 21st of 2012 was supposed to be the end of the Mayan calendar and the end of the current era, the end of the world. They came out and said that they had done, we're using the wrong calendar, so the math was off, and I think yesterday was supposed to be the day. At least these people, as wrong as they've been for the 2012 prediction and for yesterday, at least they've only gotten it wrong twice. You look at the climate alarmists, they have been getting the end of the world and end of civilization wrong since, near as I can tell, maybe around 1972. And it's pretty much on a monthly to annual basis that they make a prediction that the world is going to end at a particular time. So I cut them some slack. If they're still trying to work their way through the Mayan calendar and find end times for all of us based on that, being 0 for 2 is not necessarily the worst record out there. It's certainly doing better than most of the climate alarmists. Anyway, we are back to it. I did go ahead and prepare a show. I didn't have a whole lot of faith, so I did do a little bit of research prior to yesterday, figuring we would be in here on Monday. Yesterday, a lot to talk about, actually. Some kind of overarching stuff. We're going to talk about Trump's rally. Be very interested to know what people think about that. Obviously, a lot of controversy around it with the crowd size. But I'll start with yesterday's interview with John Bolton that I watched last night. John Bolton's got his book. I believe it is supposed to come out tomorrow now, the judge having ruled that that horse has left the barn. Apparently, a lot of funny things around it. Apparently, somebody leaked a PDF of it. Now, by the time I had seen the tweet that linked to the PDF, it was actually a Google Drive file of the entire book. The link was taken down, but this PDF exists out there, and I would imagine if I wanted to, I could probably find it out there. And also the fact that the judge said there may be some civil problems with John Bolton releasing this book, and he may not make any money off of it. It does give me a little bit of a smile to think that John Bolton could be left not making any money off of this book, although I believe he got a $2 million advance on this thing. It makes me smile a little bit to think that the publishers getting into bed with John Bolton won't make any money on this book or could possibly lose money on this book. That gives me a little bit of a smile. But I also know creatures like John Bolton are just swimming around in money through think tanks and all kinds of kickbacks from God knows how much the defense contractors owe John Bolton. He has lined their coffers with trillions of dollars during his tenure, so I think John Bolton will be absolutely fine. I'd love to think he's not going to make any money off this book, but I got to tell you, it probably won't put a dent in what he's due. But what a piece of crap. John Bolton, every bit as nasty and disgusting as I have told you he was from the day his name was announced as national security advisor. And I found myself watching his interview last night with ABC. They gave him an hour to go through the book and all kinds of different topics. By now, most people kind of know what he's insinuating. He said he will not vote for Donald Trump. He doesn't think Trump's fit for office. He doesn't believe that he is up for the job. He's erratic. He doesn't have any core principles. He can go down the laundry list of what he said. But I found myself just watching that, and I had this odd thought, and I'm a pretty zen. I think I'm a very nice human being. I have a great deal of compassion and empathy for people, particularly the people in the Middle East who have been at the receiving end of neocon like John Bolton's bombs for decades now, needless, endless suffering for the Middle East at the hands of this villain, John Bolton. I found myself kind of coming out of my more zen, rational, compassionate heart and just thinking, how is it? I recently lost a fraternity brother to a heart attack just a couple of days after his daughter's high school graduation. It was just really very sad. And how is it that some good people can die so young and yet people like John Bolton just continue on? Hillary Clinton, Sheldon Adelson, George Soros, these people just continue to go on. Henry Kissinger. Good people die every day needlessly, yet John Bolton sits in that chair being responsible for the deaths and dismemberments of just hundreds of thousands, millions of people, and nothing happened. But I actually started thinking then, this is where my mind goes to. Look, I talk a lot on this air about this this misplaced hatred that everybody has for each other. You're really mad at your liberal neighbor or your Trump-living cousin. Everybody's at each other's throats. You're screaming at strangers on Twitter. It's wildly unhealthy. It's not productive. It is exactly what the elite globalist want you doing. Yet Trump supporters and Democrats in general do it every single day, scream at each other. So I preach a lot against that hate, but I got to tell you, I got a streak inside me for people like the John Boltons of this world. And I thought the fate I would like to see for John Bolton is we should take him up in a helicopter and drop him right on the border. I mean, right on the line between Iraq and Iran. Give them plenty of heads up that he's coming and that he will be alone. There will be no security provided. And just, you know, put him in a harness, lift him by a helicopter, fly him over there and just drop him precisely on that line between Iraq and Iran and just let them each get a chance to take a half of John Bolton. Now, I will tell you this, too. In the course of what they were playing last night as they were doing the John Bolton interview, one of the things in the intro was a clip of Sean Hannity coming on and saying, "Great news! A great American, John Bolton, has been named National Security Advisor." This is back when Trump named John Bolton National Security Advisor. Sean Hannity said, "Great news. Here he comes." Fox News had John Bolton on as their national security analyst for years and years. I got to tell you, I know a lot of this stuff that I cover on this show is new to a lot of people. You're shocked to turn into conservative radio and hear somebody blasting Republicans like Sean Hannity and John Bolton. It's different. I don't know how many people had the intellectual curiosity to hear the rest of what I say because you think, oh my gosh, he must be a Hillary fan if he doesn't like Sean Hannity. No, I'm telling you, Fox News and Sean Hannity, they're Judas goats. They are there to plug in Sean Hannity, who will come on and tell you about the deep state attack on Donald Trump while wearing FBI and CIA lapel pins. And Fox News viewers eat that up with a spoon. I am just here to warn you about it. Now, some of in John Bolton's interview last night, a couple of the criticisms he had for Donald Trump actually gave me some hope that Trump still has some good instincts. Trump seemed very dismissive of John Bolton when he was in office to a degree. Told him he was crazy. Told him he was hostile or angry. Something along those lines, which feels to me like Trump in an unguarded moment, just looking at this wacko John Bolton and saying, "Good grief, what is wrong with you? Why are you so angry? Why are you so hostile? Why do you want to start so many wars?" The only problem with that is that's great that Donald Trump can see that in him. The question is, then why the hell did he hire him in the first place? And it's funny to me that conservatives are still kind of hoodwinked by John Bolton policies, even though John Bolton's not there, and now John Bolton has fallen out of favor with Trump supporters and with Republicans because he's disloyal to Donald Trump, yet you still support a lot of John Bolton's policies. This is John Bolton, a quote from him. I think this might be from his book, On Iran. I urged that he, meaning the president, press ahead to withdraw from the nuclear agreement and explained why the use of force against Iran's nuclear program might be the only lasting solution. And then listen to this. Now it's him quoting Trump. You tell Bibi, talking about Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, that if he uses force, I will back him. I told him that, but you tell him again. That's what Trump told John Bolton, he says, unprompted by me. And there's one radio show that comes to you every single day and explains to you that our endless support of Israel is going to get us into even more trouble in the Middle East. They can be a friend and an ally and a trading partner, but this idea that we will back anything they do gets us into more wars in the Middle East. But it's just interesting to me. So those of you out there who think that getting out of the Iran nuclear deal was this genius move, you are actually falling for a John Bolton neocon talking point. So it's quite a thing. The book's going to come out tomorrow. I think the cat's pretty much out of the bag. Trump sent out his tweets like he does every time somebody turns on him. He's a wacko. Nobody liked him. I fired him. You know, he does this kind of a disclaimers. And then for the vast majority of people, they don't ever stop and go, why do you keep hiring these people? They just say it was a genius hire and then a genius fire. It's bizarre, actually, to watch. But the Bolton book, we'll see if it results in any levels of investigations by the Democrats. The Democrats now, all you loving liberals out there, your new hero now, is essentially a Hitler-like figure. That's who you're worshiping now, just because any means to get to Donald Trump you love, even if you have to support a horribly, horribly evil warmonger like John Bolton. Or John Brennan and the CIA. I love watching the liberals, the loving liberals, line up behind the deep state warmongers as your new flag, your banner wavers, because you're so deranged about trying to get to Donald Trump that you will sell your soul to someone like John Bolton. It's fascinating to watch. But anyway, I'm just going to say it again. When it comes to John Bolton, I told you.
If you need an experienced lawyer that you can trust, contact the law firm of Danks, Miller & Corey. Our lawyers represent clients and small businesses across Mississippi. With over 100 years of combined legal experience, we have the expertise to handle even the most complex legal matters. When you need a lawyer to fight for you, don't compromise. Call Danks, Miller & Corey. You can reach us at 601-957-3101, 601-957-3101, or online at danksmillercorey.com.
We are 5 months away from the election. Is that correct? Or is it 4.5 months? Something like that. It's coming up, and as fast as time is flying by, it's going to be honest before we know it. But campaign season kind of kicked off post-COVID this weekend with the Trump rally we'll talk a little bit about, because I'm going to come to a conclusion that people, I don't know, I'll be interested to know. I'm going to come to a conclusion, and I'll put the phone number out there, and you can call me if you see, tell me if you agree, or tell me why I'm wrong. I do not like scotch. I want to like scotch. It seems kind of like a cool thing to do. It seems mature. I'm 52 years old, and a lot of my friends like a good scotch. If you see classy people on TV, or if you see successful people like to sit back at the end of a day and have a nice glass of scotch, I really want to. I've tried bad scotches. I've tried decent scotch. I don't know if I've ever had a super premium scotch. I've tried it sipping it slowly by itself. I've tried putting it on ice and giving it 10 minutes to melt and mix with the water and do everything that all of my scotch-loving friends have told me to do. I just do not like scotch. I do not judge anybody who likes scotch. I guess I'm just a bourbon man. And to be honest with you, I have such an unsophisticated palate that usually when I drink bourbon, I drink it with Zevia, which is a stevia-sweetened soft drink, because I used to really love and still do like the taste of bourbon and Coke when I have a drink. This is a drink I drank when I was in college, and I still haven't gotten away from it. I can't move on to the classier things. I don't like a gin martini. I still have this unsophisticated palate. I don't like craft-style beers. I want to, because I love the idea of these small independent breweries putting out these products that are competing with the big boys and hiring and starting their new businesses and catching fire. It's a crowded field, but everybody kind of gets their little cult following of their particular beers and they do them by season. I really like that model. It's just that for me, when I drink these craft beers, and there are probably some out there I haven't had, there's too many of them for me to go through all of them and find something I like. I try to get recommendations, but just almost to a beer, it's a little too thick for me. It's kind of heavy, maybe a little bit too bitter. And again, my unsophisticated palate kicks in. I like things like Coors Light. It's almost a source of embarrassment with my hoity-toity friends when everybody goes out and orders their drinks and I'm either bourbon and Coke or a Coors Light. Or a Bud Light, or a Miller Light. I barely can even tell the difference between the three of those. My palate is so unsophisticated. I want to like a craft beer. I want to like a scotch. I understand a lot of people do like these things. I just don't get it. When I drink scotch, it's just nothing but kind of pain. Burns my nose. There's no enjoyable taste in scotch and water. What I've understood is that to like scotch, many, many people have told me, yeah, I didn't like scotch either, but one time I was at a party and there was nothing else to drink, so I drank scotch and I acquired a taste for it. Well, I've tried to acquire a taste. I've never been in a kind of a lifeboat situation at a party where I felt the need to drink and scotch was the only thing there, but apparently this is a gateway to liking it. I just cannot get there. And this is now how I feel about the Trump rallies. At this point, I just don't get it. I'm sorry. Now, I understood the interest and excitement in Donald Trump in 2016. I tried to attend the Madison Central rally in 2016. I didn't make it in. I stayed out at the football field for a little while, which was overflow because there was no room. I guess that was in the gym at Madison Central back in 2016. There was no room inside, so we sat outside in a big overflow crowd. I understood it because I liked a lot of what Donald Trump was saying in 2016. There were some really refreshing things, and he's got a shtick. It was entertaining. I was loving watching him dispatch with people like Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio and Lindsey Graham, sending them packing with just minuscule amounts of support for their campaigns. These people who had spent their entire careers leading up to that moment, and in steps to Donald Trump and sucks all of the air out of the room of the other 16 people. And Donald Trump said a lot of things I really like, particularly surrounding ending the wars, around the bogus economic numbers. So in 2016, I got the Trump rally. But I got to tell you, at this point, I do not understand a Trump rally or the enthusiasm for Donald Trump. And I'm going to make my case here I'm going to pose the question to you. And then you're welcome to call in and tell me. Again, it's like scotch. I know a lot of people like scotch. I'm not saying anyone's wrong to like scotch. I'm not somebody who goes, scotch is terrible. You must be an idiot for liking scotch. No, it's just to the point where I've tried it and tried it. I just can't like it. I don't understand the enthusiasm. Now, I understand. Let me make sure you understand me. I understand anybody who wants to vote for Donald Trump over Joe Biden. Totally understand that. The left has gone so nuts. that I can understand getting up on November 3rd and making sure that you get to a poll to rebuke the Democratic Party and Joe Biden. So there's a difference in my mind between a vote, voting for somebody, and then actual enthusiasm and avid support for somebody. And after 3.5 years, almost 4 years now, of Donald Trump, when I think of a rally, do you know what I think of? Words. Now, the words in 2016 were very interesting to me because we'd never seen any opportunity to put them into action, and they were new words, many new words that I was ready to hear. Now, people like Trump for different reasons. Mine was mostly about the wars. It was mostly about Hillary Clinton. It was mostly about the swamp, the deep state, the swamp in Washington, D.C. For a lot of people, it was more the immigration. I knew a wall would never be built, so I never chanted, built the wall, because I've told you since the day I came on air, look, that's great, it's just never going to happen, and I'm going to be proven right on that. But I understood the enthusiasm. Now, when it comes to the words, I don't care. 3.5 years is enough to have seen the action on it. And when I say out as an outsider, and again, let me preface this again by saying, I understand anybody who votes for Donald Trump. Joe Biden is a disaster. The Democratic Party has gone completely off the rails. It's almost humorous to me how easy Donald Trump would be to beat if the Democrats weren't so nuts. I could be such an effective political advisor. I mean, the Democratic Party at this point right now, we've still got 4 or 5 months to the election, could crush Donald Trump by putting up somebody normal, somebody who disavows disbanding the police and other ridiculous things that 80% of the population realize are insane. But they won't. Instead, they've given us a dementia patient that is just going to tell the radicals whatever they want to hear. I mean, it's insane. It feels to me like the Democrats are trying to give Donald Trump the election right now. But I'm going to take a break. I'm going to come back. I'm going to tell you why the words don't matter to me anymore. Because after 3.5 years, I'll examine the words that were used in 2016 and the words that were used on Saturday night and the words that we've been hearing for 3.5 years, and the results do not bear out that actions are backing up these words. I'll be right back. All night!
Think back to your childhood. I bet you can recall that one person who was always tattling on you. You took an extra cookie from the jar. They told mom. Didn't brush your teeth before bed. They ratted you out. Well, our own bodies are a lot like those childhood tattletales, consistently giving us reports of our health and well-being. Naturally You, a nutrition response testing center, uses a natural, scientific, and non-invasive system of analyzing your body to discover the underlying causes of ill health. Certified practitioners at Naturally You use your body's neurological reflexes and acupuncture points to determine what nutrients your body needs, then designs a dietary supplement program based on your body and condition. If you have struggled with weight, fatigue, or ongoing health issues, Naturally You invites you to join them this Tuesday night for a free workshop. Visit naturallyyou.fit to reserve your spot. That's naturallyyou.fit.
We are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Phone number here, 601-879-0002. I'm doing what's not probably the most popular segment, but I got to tell you, I'm just so disappointed in Donald Trump. I really am. And so I'm talking about the rallies. I understand a vote for Donald Trump. I'm just wondering why there would be enthusiasm at this point. Do you really think a second term is going to be very different than a first term?
Well, we're going to talk about that a little bit. It was kind of funny during the news break. Did you hear just then, if you're listening to the podcast, there was just a news break where they're reporting that New York City is reopening. They're in phase two of the great reopening of New York City, where they're going to allow outside dining. And they are going to have social distancing ambassadors. That's what they just called them on the news break. They're putting social distancing ambassadors out into playgrounds and other spaces to make sure that people are 6 feet apart from each other. Can you even imagine in the United States? I wonder if the Soviet Union had something as ridiculously titled as a social distancing ambassador to go around and micromanage a human population that's pretty clear on what the danger is. I mean, in New York City, above all places, I think they've got an idea, but they can't be trusted to guard their own health. They need some level of employee or busybody. I don't know. Maybe they go around to all the homeowners associations around and get all the busybody presidents and people who like to boss people around and get them to come in and start monitoring social distancing between other human beings. Oh, what a job. What a job. We've just absolutely gone insane. There's nuance in the world that has been lost, in my opinion. Everything now is black and white. You either are 100% with Trump or 100% against him. You're either completely with Black Lives Matter or you're a complete racist. And, you know, I think that's really damaging to us. And I don't know any way out of it. And I was thinking about it the other day. I think I'm onto something here. I think maybe this is because we've become Twitterized. You know, you cannot within, I don't know what Twitter is. I don't do Twitter. Is it 140 characters? Did I hear that they jacked that up? Is it like 280 characters now or something? But anyway, it's small, right? There's no way to do any nuance. There's no way to actually put out something that is thoughtful. In order to get thoughtful analysis on anything, you'd have to, I don't know, read an article that dedicates many, many paragraphs to the different varying considerations surrounding an issue. But instead, we have just been so dumbed down and that now every opinion is put out in these just a few sentences. So there's no level of nuance anymore. And so as I try to do this segment and say, my point is, if you're just joining me, I understand a vote for Donald Trump, the idea of a Biden, Pelosi, Schumer, Black Lives Matter, Marxist government right now is as terrifying to me as it is to anybody else. I totally get if the race ends up being Donald Trump versus Joe Biden, I understand going out and vote. I'll be honest with you. If Cindy Hyde Smith is neck and neck with Mike Espy, I understand with going out and voting for Cindy Hyde Smith. Republicans refuse to actually primary any of these establishment Republicans. So if you're not going to do anything good, you might as well just, you know, make sure that you don't let the Democrats take over. I get that. What I'm talking about now is enthusiasm. See, I don't think there's any enthusiasm. This is one of Trump's huge weaknesses. There's no enthusiasm for Joe Biden from the Democrats. Zero. Zilch. I can't imagine anybody who has any real love for Joe Biden or anything. Joe Biden is going to get more votes and is polling better right now, not because of who Joe Biden is, but because of Donald Trump. Donald Trump is energizing the left. And he feeds them more kindling on that fire every passing day. And I'm going to tell you, I don't think that's going to really work out. But so this is a nuanced question to everybody. I understand voting. If you have enthusiasm, here's why I don't understand it. Just like I said, I just can't get there. I don't like scotch. I've tried. I understand people like scotch. I feel like I'm missing something. It's the same way when I was thinking about a Trump rally this weekend. Why is there the enthusiasm? Here's what I see from the Trump administration so far. Again, saying, I understand if you want to vote for him. The left has lost their mind and must be stopped. You're no argument with me there. I voted for Donald Trump because the wars. That was one of the biggest things. Finally, somebody comes out and calls out the biggest mistake in American history, which is the Iraq War. And all of the money and these troops and the innocent lives halfway around the world, Donald Trump calls it out. The wars are not ended. We've lowered the bar to accommodate, dear leader. We've lowered the bar from getting us out of the Middle East to now Trump supporters tell me, yeah, but he hadn't started any new wars. Yeah, he's just kept the seven going. And I believe the assassination of General Soleimani risked starting a very, very large war. It's just that Iran did not really necessarily react to that. When Congress actually tried to stop the wars in Yemen and rein in our Iran policy, Trump vetoed both of those things. That is not ending Middle Eastern wars. That is just leaving the status quo in place. When Donald Trump campaigned, he said the economic numbers are used just to make politicians look good, and I cheered and showed up at his rally and pulled that lever. I voted for the man. Yes, finally somebody is calling this out. And then within a month, he started using those bogus economic numbers, and they are being used up to and including today. Hillary Clinton hasn't missed a day of luxury and freedom since the day Donald Trump came into office, and immediately after he got elected, he said, look, they're good people. She's already been through enough. There is no wall. And again, I'm saying these things because I understand a vote for Donald Trump. What is the enthusiasm? What do you think is going to come out of a second term? Now, if you think if the goal of a second Trump term is to just keep a Democrat out of the White House, I understand that, and I'm with you. But do you think that the wall is going to be built in the second term? There were all of these headwinds, and we're going to go through some of the excuses, too, because I'm not buying these. And when I listen to a Trump rally at this point, it's more words to me. They're not policy prescriptions. They're not promises of things that are going to be done, because the words that were said in 2016 when I was enthusiastic about the rallies have not come to fruition. There is no wall. Even by Trump's own admission, I think it's 250 miles, maybe. They're promising 500 miles done by the end of this year or by the election time. There is no U.S. manufacturing renaissance. Now, I don't lay that directly at Donald Trump's feet, but that's what he campaigned on. I hear a lot, well, there are thousands of new manufacturing facilities in this country. He's bringing it all back to the United States. That's quite simply not true. If it is true, those manufacturing plants that have been built weren't producing anything for the past year. Manufacturing activity in the United States was going down for 8 months prior to COVID. Again, I don't lay that directly at Donald Trump's feet, but it is one of the trends that I had hoped might change, and I liked from his original campaign stuff. Obamacare is still with us. They took away the individual mandate. Kudos for Trump doing that, that unconstitutional thing that John Roberts was behind. Don't get me started on the Supreme Court. That hadn't worked out so well for conservatives either. It was really one of those bright spots with so many of these things that I'm listing off that have not happened. At least people thought, well, yeah, but we got some conservatives on the Supreme Court. And then all of a sudden the last week showed us, well, does that even really matter at this point? Trade deficits are actually higher than they've been in the past. And this is one of the things that was supposed to reverse trend and become smaller. Trade deficits are higher. The globalists are richer than ever. The Fed is bigger than ever. And that is the head of globalism. For people who do not understand the Federal Reserve, when you talk about globalists, the head of the snake is the U.S. Federal Reserve. They are bigger than they have ever been. The government is bigger than it has ever been. And the deep state is deeper than it has ever been. The debt, even before COVID, don't even get me started on what's happened as this federal response after COVID. The debt was growing over $1 trillion a year. I voted for a guy who said he was going to pay that off. We were going to grow our way out of it. We had a businessman in office. This was one of my great hopes. I'd always heard my whole life, if we can just get a businessman in there, we'll finally get some efficiencies in there. Spending, they understand a budget. They understand operating profitably. I don't think the government should profit. It's a different beast. But you would think you would shrink it to a manageable size and get rid of some of the waste, fraud, and abuse, yet the government just keeps getting bigger. Trump hired a bunch of Goldman Sachs guys, globalists and neocons. So what I'm supposed to listen to campaign rhetoric now that convinces me that he's going to drain the swamp in his second term? He didn't do it in his first term. And a lot of these things, too, we forget. Republicans had the whole run of the House the first 2 years. They had the Congress, the Senate, and the presidency. Because a lot of people will say, yeah, but the Democrats have been fighting him every term. I'll get to that in just a second. We have never in this country's history, since I've been alive, since the 1970s and on, this country has never been more divided. The media has certainly stoked a lot of that, but Trump's style just exacerbates it. It's just a back and forth, and each little salvo back and forth between the ridiculous media and the Democrats and Donald Trump further stokes hate and division in this country. I mean, DACA wasn't even repealed. Last week, after all of this time, there is no wall. There is no comprehensive immigration reform. I don't know if immigration numbers are down or not. I kind of think that maybe Trump has had some effect on that. Maybe he's gotten Mexico to work with us. There may be some positive trends on immigration to the United States. But to be honest with you, none of us know. It's like COVID numbers. We have no idea. The media will report what they when the border is an issue to the media. They will report numbers, and then the Trump administration will counter that with other numbers. And if you hate Trump, you take the media's numbers. And if you love Trump, you take Trump's numbers. But we don't even talk about immigration anymore. Really haven't for a year. There was one big immigration raid here locally. And maybe I think I heard of one other one over the past 3.5 years. That's it. There has no been mass deportation of millions and millions of people. So again, I understand a vote for Donald Trump, but I'm just looking at the record and thinking, why do people want to go hear more words? Again, if you vote for him, that's absolutely fine. I get that. I totally understand that. But why would there be enthusiasm this time around? What should be exciting me about a second Trump term? Are the Democrats certainly going to lay down and let him do the things? Because the excuses... The excuses are essentially the media is mean to me. The Democrats obstruct me. The Supreme Court hates me. It strikes me a little bit as whining, but none of those things are going to change in a second 4 years. So a vote for Donald Trump is blocking Democrats' entrance into the White House. Now, I'm going to get to another conclusion, too, that I don't know if anybody is even contemplating or considering, but I'm telling you, I think you better start thinking about it pretty seriously. I'll be right back. All night
with the king. Food allergies know how difficult it can be to find quality, affordable restaurants that cater to your needs. That's why the folks over at Your Pie have made a commitment to ensure everyone can enjoy great-tasting pizza. Your Pie offers gluten-free dough, vegan, non-dairy cheese, and non-dairy sorbet. Just ask for it next time you're in line. Matter of fact, just mention any allergy you have, and the folks at Your Pie will go over the top to make sure you can safely enjoy their delicious food. That's Your Pie in Gluckstadt, where food allergies never stop you from being able to express your inner pizza.
Right into this world, all alone. God takes your soul, you're on your own.
Let me tell you, I'm seeing something ugly lining up. And I don't think it's really being talked about, and I could be wrong, and really with the way as volatile as our political world is right now and our society in general, there's no telling what can happen in the next 4 months. I saw a meme. It was welcome to the second half of 2020 or something like that. And it was just the picture of a huge freight engine going down the tracks, completely engulfed in fire. I mean, that's what it feels like. This is really just bizarre times. I'm talking about today the enthusiasm for Donald Trump. And I think that Trump needs to change tax. And the only way he does is if base lets him know. I see something getting set up here that if it doesn't change, I think all of the fears that Republicans have are set to happen. I think that there's a lot of people that want to come. I think there's a lot of rational people on the left or independents out there who see the craziness going on in this world. Going on around these cities and states that are experiencing this rioting and those statues being torn down, and they're not comfortable with that. But Trump makes it so hard to come to his side because he's alienated so many people in in just a constant attempt to always rally just the base. And you have to understand, if you're in the base, God love you, you love Donald Trump, but he doesn't need you right now. He needs other people. You're there. You're there. You're not going anywhere. If Trump calmed down, if he changed his demeanor, and look, I'm not fooling myself, he's not going to do these things. But if he does not, I think there's a very good chance that the Senate could get lost, and I'm going to tell you why. Not necessarily because Democrats, I'm not following all of the states where there are close Senate elections, but I ran across a concerning story the other day where it was essentially saying that Donald Trump is putting Senate Republicans, and I guess congressional Republicans too, on notice, essentially, that don't abandon him. If they do, they will regret it. The story said, now with Republicans fighting to keep the Senate majority, lawmakers running in competitive races are having to decide whether to align themselves with the president or risk his wrath by creating daylight. Trump made clear those who choose the latter will pay a heavy price. Joined by top aides, including his son-in-law, Jared Kushner. What a disaster it is that Jared Kushner is making decisions for this country. Trump put Senate Republicans on notice. Running away from him will only trigger a revolt by his loyalist. Quote, if they don't embrace, they're going to lose because, you know, I have a very hard base. I have the strongest base people have ever seen, said Trump, who met with Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell last week to discuss the party's prospects in key Senate races. Let's see if I got time to finish this out because I'm going to make a point on this. Trump is keenly aware of how he stacks up against other Republicans on the ballot this fall. The reason for even reading this is not because Trump may be, if he was just making this as an observation, hey, look, my base will turn out for anybody that supports me. If you don't, they won't. That's fine. The problem is we have seen in the past where if somebody goes against Donald Trump, and look, these politicians, they don't have any core beliefs. They will ride Trump's coattails if it is expedient to them politically, and they will distance themselves from him if they think that it will cost them an election. That's just what they do. They're political animals. They're scumbags. But we've seen Trump actually go after people the way he has savagely gone after Jeff Sessions in the Alabama race against Tommy Tuberville. You may actually have a scenario where Trump dethrones some Senate Republicans because they do not pledge their undying love to him, and they try to distance because they feel their constituents maybe aren't down with Trump, so they try to campaign kind of around him. He may attack them for that and cost them a Senate seat. You may actually see, whether Donald Trump's elected or not, you may see him push out some Republicans in the Senate, and then Republicans' worst fears are realized.
Mike Madison here. All of us should be flying our U.S. flag. And now's the perfect time to contact a complete flag source to have a flagpole installed at your home or business. For a limited time, all U.S. flags up to 5x8 along with flagpole setups are 15% off. That's 15, 20, and 25-foot in-ground kits, sectional, and aluminum. House spinner poles will keep your flag from wrapping in the wind, and a complete flag source has all of the right brackets. Visit a complete flag source, I-55 North Frontage Road, Jackson, or online at CompleteFlags.com.
I need your arms around me. I need to feel your touch. I need your understanding. I need your love so much. You tell me that you love me so. You tell me.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me. Phone number here, 601-879-0002. I am delivering what I am really is kind of a warning. It won't be heated. It won't make any difference. It's just that I see some troubling signs ahead. Now, there was the low turnout at the Trump rally. There are really acceptable reasons for that. The media has got everybody so freaked out about coronavirus. A lot of people might not have wanted to be in an enclosed space. There's the idea that the TikTok kids took all the tickets. That one does not carry much water with me because there was no cap on it. It's not like they put out 20,000 tickets and TikTok took them all and only 6,000. I mean, 50,000 people could have showed up for that rally. nothing that happened on TikTok had any effect on how many bodies actually went to the rally. Maybe it was the thought of protest. There are some legitimate reasons. It really doesn't matter to me, to be honest with you. But it could also be a sign of some waning popularity, because here's the thing that I think the Trump base is ignoring to your own peril. It's people like me. People like Ann Coulter. And what happens is, I've seen this in watching the stories and reading comments under stories, Ann Coulter, who wrote "In Trump We Trust," is so discouraged with the lack of progress on any of his main campaign issues last year that she has essentially turned on him. And I see the Trump base swarm her and call her a has-been and she's a nut job. You loved her when she put out "In Trump We Trust." Now you say she's a has-been. It's a little bit like having a business. And if your customers leave, if some of your big clients leave, you can call them names and act like, well, it's not any of our responsibility. We didn't do anything wrong. We're doing everything perfect. There's something wrong with those clients. But when more and more customers leave, I mean, at some point you've got to kind of reassess, hey, something's happening here. Maybe we should refine our message or our product or our service. Something's going on here. And I think that Donald Trump himself and Trump's hardcore base are kind of whistling past the graveyard here. And I think it's concerning, because here's my warning. Would Donald Trump actually kind of burn the place down if people are not loyal to him? And I'm afraid, Republicans, you may be on the cusp of something none of us want to see, which is an awful lot of Democrats running the show. I don't want to see that either. The reason I bring that up is here's from this story. They did an interview with Donald Trump. You know, the media loves to do stories, and I'm not doing it for the same reason the media is. I'm doing this as a warning, not as a for any other reason. They'll do a lot of stories about Donald Trump and his concerns about reelection. I mean, his numbers are not good. His poll numbers are not good. Now, I know a lot of people just say, well, they don't matter. They're not real. They said Hillary Clinton was going to win. Okay, that's fine. But I don't see any evidence in the real world that somehow Donald Trump's got 70% approval rating with the American people. I don't know where you would possibly come up with that. And here's the concerning thing from this article. Trump is keenly aware of how he stacks up against other Republicans on the ballot this fall. At one point during the interview, White House political director Brian Jack handed the president a document showing how he had fared better in several primaries this spring than a handful of Republican senators he shared the ballot with in their home states. Included in the chart was North Carolina Senator Tom Tillis, one of the most vulnerable Republican incumbents up for re-election this November. While Tillis received 78% of the state's March primary, Trump got 94%, it noted. Quote, "Wow, that's great in North Carolina, huh?" Trump remarked as he looked over the sheet. Now, that's a little disingenuous. If a Republican is running against another Republican in a primary, but Trump is really not running against anybody in his primary race in North Carolina. I mean, I guess maybe Bill Weld was on there, or I don't know what other weirdos actually ran against Donald Trump in the Republican. I mean, Trump was essentially, he was not opposed. Of course he's going to get 94%. He's running unopposed. If Republicans turned up, they probably voted for Donald Trump. There was not a choice. 6% either voted for the other guys, or they just don't like Trump and just didn't vote for him. But the Tillis guy was running against somebody else, and he got 78%, which is pretty convincing in a primary. So that's, you know, that kind of thing to say, oh, look at this. I'm wildly more popular than this Tillis guy. And if he doesn't get on board with the Trump train, he's going to lose because he only got 78%. That's an apples and oranges comparison between Tillis and Trump on that thing. But here's the concerning part. During the interview, Trump rattled off a list of senators who lost their seats after separating themselves from him. He recalled ending the political careers of Tennessee Republican Bob Corker. Quote, "So anyway, I went after him," he said, "no longer a senator." And Arizona Republican Jeff Flake, quote, "He went from 54% to 3%. Nevada Republican Dean Heller, quote, "went down," unquote, in the general election. Quote, this is what Trump said, "How did that work out for the great senator of Nevada? Not too good." And this is another quote by Donald Trump. "We will, on occasion, have some senators that want to be cute," he said, "and they don't want to embrace their president." So imagine a close Senate race somewhere in somebody who lives in a district that is not just absolutely loyal to Donald Trump. Maybe has some concerns, or maybe there's some independence that a Republican might need to pick up to win a tight race, and so they just don't fully embrace Donald Trump during the campaign. Imagine Trump actually going after them. Because they don't want to, as he just said, embrace their president. I think there's a very real possibility, and a politician who distances himself from Trump, or just, I don't know, they're necessarily distancing themselves. They don't even have to criticize. They just may not put Trump stuff in their campaign things. That's calculated. It's because they think they've got a better chance to win not mentioning Donald Trump this time around. And I will remind you, the Republicans lost the House 2 years ago. They lost it. So far, Trump does not have a record of winning over more seats than he loses as president of the United States. Now, that may change this time. As I say, it's a world away. It's 4 or 5 months away. But I'm seeing this, what I feel like is almost a perfect storm right now. If Trump stays on his current trajectory, and if Joe Biden continues to hide out, which is the best campaign strategy Joe Biden could possibly undertake. I was talking to a friend last night. Here's what Joe Biden needs to do to win. He needs to say darn near nothing. He needs to hide for as long as he possibly can. And then I believe a friend was asking me last night, well, they're going to have to debate, which that could be a bloodbath. But at the same time, this may sound a little strange, but I believe it's true. You can take somebody like a Joe Biden who is suffering severe mental decline and load him up on something like an Adderall or some kind of a chemical that will get him probably through a coherent hour. And I believe they might have to do that. Do I believe that Joe Biden could wake up on any morning and just walk into an arena and debate Donald Trump? Absolutely not. But they may be able to get 2 to 3 hours of coherent Joe onto the stage against Donald Trump. And if Joe Biden keeps a very low profile outside of that, except for some prepared remarks and speeches, then he may be able to hide his deteriorating mental health between now and then. That just leaves Donald Trump out there talking and talking and talking. And the more Donald Trump says, the worse it is for him. As I've said for a few weeks now, this is now a race between who can say the least, who can do the least self-imposed damage. But what are you going to do? And there's a conclusion to this, that what is the goal of Republicans or conservatives? Many of you may not even consider yourselves as much Republican as you are now, more conservative or just anti-left. Republican Party is not in great favor, even with conservatives. Donald Trump kind of helped that happen. I'm forever grateful to him to waken up a lot of conservatives against the wars and some other things that Republicans have been complicit in for a while. Me being not a fan of the Republican Party, they are just slightly less bad than the Democratic Party, sometimes pretty substantially less bad. But what is the goal if you were a conservative or a Republican, or you just realize that the nut jobs on the left cannot get control of this country? What is your goal? Is it to win, or is it to get Trump reelected? You may actually have that decision to make. Because I believe, with as crazy as this world is right now, with really independent-minded or at least rational-minded people out there in the middle watching these cities burn, watching calls to disband the police, watching Antifa operate, watching out loud socialism mentioned as a possible economic model for this country, there's a lot of people in the middle that if it were not Donald Trump, if there was a calmer voice on the right that was running for president right now, I think they would be leaps and bounds ahead.
Think back to your childhood. I bet you can recall that one person who was always tattling on you. You took an extra cookie from the jar. They told mom. Didn't brush your teeth before bed. They ratted you out. Well, our own bodies are a lot like those childhood tattletales. consistently giving us reports of our health and well-being. Naturally You, a nutrition response testing center, uses a natural, scientific, and non-invasive system of analyzing your body to discover the underlying causes of ill health. Certified practitioners at Naturally You use your body's neurological reflexes and acupuncture points to determine what nutrients your body needs, then designs a dietary supplement program based on your body and condition. If you have struggled with weight, fatigue, or ongoing health issues, Naturally You invites you to join them this Tuesday night for a free workshop. Visit naturallyyou.fit to reserve your spot. That's naturallyyou.fit.
All right, well, we were interrupted by our storm alert warning last hour, but what I'm saying is the way things are lining up right now, I don't think they're looking good for really the Republican Party. Now, I'm not a big fan of the Republican Party. I was a diehard Republican for a period of time until things like Medicare Part D and the Iraq War woke me up and said, oh, look at that. They're just really, really big government stooges, just like the Democrats. So slightly less insane, yet certainly not small free market people in any way, shape, or form. So I left the party. But I would like to see 5, 6, 8, 9 different parties just really gum up the works in Washington, D.C. I'd really just rather see Washington, D.C. shrunk to nothing, let the states deal with it. You know, that's the thing, too, that's really frustrating to me with Donald Trump, or to advise him. He feels this need to act like he's in control of everything and he's the boss. And so he says things like, if you don't sort out your problems, I'll come in there and I'll do it for you. Which sets the expectation that he is in some level of control. When to me, it seems like it's so much smarter to just look at things like Minneapolis or New York City, where people are just going berserk in the streets that are run by Democrats, and say, that is a real shame. I love New York City. You know, the states have their own rights. That's the way our Constitution set everything up. They need to run their own things. I just don't know why the voters continue to elect people who allow these kinds of things to happen in the city. That would spark a lot of people in those cities to go to lay all of the blame on de Blasio or that little soy boy who's in charge of Minneapolis. I mean, this is, I think Trump made a comment. He said, well, maybe we'll just let Chaz and or Chop, I guess it's Chop now in Seattle, we'll just let it go. It's a disaster. And I think he's right. His comment on that never should have been, we'll come in there and handle it if you don't. I know he feels this need to be tough, and a lot of his base just loves the idea of law and order, and we can come in there and we're, you know, we'll send in the military and do what you weak Democrats can't. It's better to just let those people locally sort their stuff out. They will clue in. When life gets bad enough for enough people in these Democrat-run areas, they may make a political change themselves. But he has to insert himself in every single issue, every single time, everywhere. This is a golden opportunity to show how these liberal cities are failing, to show how decades of Democratic leadership have led to chaos in the streets and a lack of safety and crazy ideas like disbanding the police. If he were just to take it as an observer, say, look, I really feel for the people in these areas who are having to deal with CHOP. That's really sad. I wish, you know, maybe they'll elect some leaders that won't allow that kind of stuff to take place. That kind of talking point, I think, resonates wildly more with people than this idea of I'm in charge of it all, and if I want to with one phone call, I take care of it. Because then people go, I wonder why Trump isn't taking care of us over here. Instead of focusing all of their ire and all of their blame on these Democrat-run cities. These are the self-inflicted wounds I talk about. And the question is, when this thing's all said and done, now I don't know if Donald Trump gets a second term or not. I don't think it's looking good, to be honest with you. But again, we haven't heard much from Biden. As soon as he has to say a lot, it's going to be trouble for his campaign. But if Donald Trump doesn't win, if some of these Republican senators and congressmen that are running this time maybe try to distance themselves and Trump gets mad about it and actually goes after them, the Republican Party could be in a situation where they should be on the ascendancy. This is the maddening thing to watch. The Republicans appear to be the sane, rational ones right now. They should be polling through the roof in many areas, both nationally and locally. And I think actually Donald Trump is holding them back at this point because everything has to be about him. Again, if you tuned into this, I'm not some radical leftist. I voted for Donald Trump. It's just I'm watching this gift of the riots, this gift of the hypocrisy of the media going after people who want to open a business. There's a lot of small business owners out there that are Democrats, and they see what happened to them under Democrat leadership places. A lot of them are going to switch party affiliations if they can, if there's space for them. If their friends are not going to castigate them for supporting Trump's party because Trump has alienated and made this such a tense issue now. This is a gift to the Republican Party. The Republican Party and Donald Trump should be polling at about 70% right now. You've got your diehard 25 to 30% of left-wing people who will never admit a failure, will never actually self-examine Democrat-run states and cities, their financial problems, their crime problems. They will never admit those things. That 25 or 30% of people is lost. But there's 40% in the middle in this country. It's 30% Republican, 30% Democrat, and 40% in the middle. A large swath of that 40% will go where the sanity is. Because all they want to do is just wake up in the morning, go to work, and be left alone and feel relatively safe in their communities. But if the Republicans and Donald Trump cannot capitalize on that, then I don't know how in the world they ever win elections. I mean, this is a gift to them. And so far, it seems like they are squandering it. I believe, and I'm going to move on to something else in a second, I believe Donald Trump has squandered a presidency. I may or may not vote for him. I don't know. I will not be voting for Biden if I don't vote for Donald Trump. I'm having a hard time imagining with the bombings going on in Yemen, with so many things going on that I can in good conscience say, oh, yeah, I'm going to vote for the guy again. I don't want to see Joe Biden win, but I just can't. I can't do it. My vote doesn't matter anyway. I have the luxury of being in Mississippi, which will go for Donald Trump no matter what I do. So maybe I can feel a little pure. But I think if this does not turn around to some degree, you are actually going to have to see a Republican Party that has to rebuild itself when this is all said and done. Again, 4.5 months is a long way away. There's no telling what happens between now and then, and maybe the Republicans make a sweep and take the. I haven't seen any polling suggesting that that's possible right now, but who knows? Maybe it happens. Maybe the left continues 4 more months of absolute insanity to where a lot of independents join the Republicans. But it's amazing to me that they do not seem to be capitalizing on it already. I'll be right back.
Mike Madison here. All of us should be flying our U.S. flag. And now's the perfect time to contact a complete flag source to have a flagpole installed at your home or business. For a limited time, all U.S. flags up to 5x8 along with flagpole setups are 15% off. That's 15, 20, and 25-foot in-ground kits, sectional, and aluminum. House spinner poles will keep your flag from wrapping in the wind, and a complete flag source has all of the right brackets. Visit a complete flag source, I-55 North Frontage Road, Jackson, or online at CompleteFlags.com.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. There was another story that I guess came up on, so there was Bolton, there was the Trump rally, and then on Friday night, the firing of the guy from the Southern District of New York, Berman. I don't know much about that guy, Southern District of New York being responsible for dropping the ball on a ton of different things. Obviously, it's part of this government that we have allowed to metastasize into what it is right now. I don't know anything about him. Good guy, bad guy. Maybe you can let me know. But what I do know is the idea is that he is going to be replaced with Jay Clayton. And I guess I'm piling a little bit on Donald Trump today when I talk about the swamp and some of the creatures like William Barr that's been brought into the Trump administration, John Bolton, Steven Mnuchin, the former Goldman Sachs banker who's now running our treasury. I can go down the list. Mark Esper, the former Raytheon lobbyist who's running the military right now. I mean, it's just on and on and on. I don't know how many people are familiar with Jay Clayton, though. He's not one of the kind of A-name players out there. So here is the guy who is being proposed to take Berman's place. Again, I don't know. Maybe Berman was a bad guy, but I have been watching. Jay Clayton has been the head of the Securities and Exchange Commission. This was Trump's guy to run the Securities and Exchange Commission. I knew about this guy. The second I heard his name as being put in charge of the SEC, I said, uh-oh. Swamp's just as deep as it's ever been. Actually, this guy's a swamp creature. Here is Jay Clayton. I'm going to read a little bit of his bio for you. Again, this guy's been running the SEC. You understand what the SEC does? They're there to hold Wall Street accountable for any crimes, right? They are the chief regulator of Wall Street, the Securities and Exchange Commission. Here's the guy that's been running it. His name is Jay Clayton. After being a summer associate for the firm in the summer of 1992, Clayton joined Sullivan and Cromwell full-time in October 1995, and became a partner in January 2001. At Sullivan and Cromwell, Clayton was a member of the firm's management committee and co-managing partner of the firm's general practice group. He specialized in mergers and acquisitions, transactions, and capital markets offerings, and represented prominent Wall Street firms, including anyone? Goldman Sachs. He served as an advisor to numerous companies regarding issues related to the SEC, Federal Reserve, Department of Justice, and other agencies. He has also helped multiple corporations raise money through initial public offerings, including Alibaba. You're familiar with Alibaba? The Chinese Amazon? Ally Financial, Oxif Capital Management, Oak Tree Capital Management, Blackhawk Network Holdings, and Moelis & Company. During the financial crisis of 2007-2008, Clayton advised Bear Stearns in its fire sale to J.P. Morgan Chase. In 2007, Barclays Capital in the purchase of Lehman Brothers assets following their bankruptcy, and Goldman Sachs in connection with the investment by Berkshire Hathaway. Clayton disclosed to the U.S. Office of Government Ethics that his other corporate clients had included Talia Sonera AB, Ally Financial, Deutsche Bank, UBS, Volkswagen, SoftBank Group, the Weinstein Company, Weinstein Company, Pershing Square Capital Management, and Valiant Pharmaceuticals. Clayton's individual clients included Paul Tudor Jones, Attorney General of Ireland, Peter Sutherland, CDW founder Michael Krashy, and LinkedIn founder Reid Hoffman. Now listen to this. This is always important. So look, Jay Clayton essentially has been representing the globalists and the Wall Street firms for 20 years, or I guess 16 years before he came over to, it was over 20 years. He joined Sullivan and Cromwell in 1995. He became SEC, head of the SEC, head of enforcement on Wall Street, after having left being one of the deep Wall Street players. Do you see how nasty that is? Now this guy is going to the Southern District of New York. And I ask you this. Why is Jay Clayton taking these positions? Why did Jay Clayton go to become the head of the SEC? I don't know what the head of the SEC makes, but I'm sure with most government work, it's $200,000, give or take a little bit. What did Jay Clayton earn in 2016 before he was named head of the SEC in 2017? Clayton earned $7.6 million in 2016 from his firm at Sullivan and Cromwell. Now, why do you think a guy goes from earning $7.6 million in 2016 to earning $200,000 in 2017? Now, one of the reasons that they do that, it says he made $7.6 million in 2016 from his firm and has a family wealth of at least $50 million. Yeah, we're really giving back the government to the common guy. A substantial portion of his holdings were in mutual funds at the Vanguard Group. His investments also included private funds managed by Apollo Global Management, Bain Capital, J.C. Flowers & Company, and Richard C. Perry. And here it is. Here's the kicker right here. But he divested these investments upon confirmation. Now, what happens if you sell $50 million worth of investments if you've got a bunch of capital gains in there? You can pay well over $10 million in capital gains taxes unless you are forced to divest yourself of these funds to take a government position. You avoid those taxes, I believe, forever. So he probably did get a nice little $10 million bonus being able to sell those things. And then he can take that $50 million and reinvest it somewhere else. That'll be his cost basis, and he will have avoided taxes on that first $50 million. Now, the reason I bring this up is because this is one of those players that's out there. And one of the reasons why I look at this administration and I say, well, what am I expecting out of a second Trump term when this guy who has been, I mean, listen to the names in who Jay Clayton has been representing, J.P. Morgan Chase, Barclays, Lehman Brothers, Alibaba, Bear Stearns, Goldman Sachs, the Weinstein Company, Pershing Square, UBS, Volkswagen. I mean, these are globalist corporations. This guy was corporate counsel for a bunch of globalist corporations before he took over head enforcement branch of the government on Wall Street, which is the SEC. See, nothing has changed. What am I clinging to? Four more years of what? Of Jay Clayton's going into office, of Raytheon running the Defense Department, of Eli Lilly running Health and Human Services, of CIA running State Department. There was other one good article that I ran across, too. One of the things that we were getting out of the Trump administration that was touted as coming out of the Trump administration was the idea that we were energy independent. This has been a big rallying cry for the last year, 2 years maybe. There's a very interesting article on oilprice.com. Now, this guy's name is Arthur Berman, writing for oilprice.com. What you hear when you hear we're energy independent, that is a talking point. It is a political talking point. Unless you are in the oil and gas business and understand geopolitics and the inflows and outflows of oil, then you are just clinging to a talking point. And I've been watching this the whole time saying, you know, that's such a bogus phrase anyway, because what do you think ExxonMobil will do? I mean, they are an American company. What do you think they do if oil prices spike around the world and other countries are willing to pay $100 a barrel, but in the U.S. we want to pay $60 a barrel? Our American companies are going to export that oil to the highest paying country. So energy independence is always kind of an odd term for me, because it does not mean that because we're pumping more oil that oil is going to stay here. But this is a great piece by this guy at oilprice.com. He says U.S. energy dominance is over. Output is probably going to drop by 50% over the next year, and nothing can be done about it. The U.S. tight oil or shale rig count has fallen 69% this year, from 539 in mid-March to 165 last week. Tight oil production will decline 50% by this time next year. As a result, U.S. oil production will fall to less than 8 million barrels per day by mid-2021. This is the author. He says, the party is over for shale and U.S. energy dominance. Now, one of the reasons for this shale boom in the first place is endless runs of free money from the Federal Reserve. They just made it so easy to borrow money and pay so little for it that these companies could rack up, and they put them into these shale operations. And look, you know, I'm fine. I said this before. Happy with oil companies. We need oil. I'm an oil fan. I use it every day. But the idea that this shale drilling was a long-term solution to energy independence in the United States, I've always thought was crazy. The story goes on. Tight oil is the foundation of U.S. energy dominance. The U.S. has always been a major oil producer, but it moved into the top tier of oil superpowers as tight oil boosted output from about 5 to more than $12 million per day. Excuse me, 5 to more than 12 million barrels per day. Now, I want you to listen to these years. Between 2008 and 2019. What happened in 2008? The Fed took interest rates down to zero and left them there essentially for the last 12 years outside of one small speed bump up to about 2.5%, which they retreated from very quickly. That is the era of free money. I also mention that because this idea that we've only seen this energy independence under Donald Trump is just quite simply not true. This was the trend. Free money created the shale boom, not any one president. It was happening under Barack Obama. It continued under Donald Trump. The story goes on, though, because I want to get to the payoff here. Much lower U.S. oil production is bad for Trump's energy dominance anthem, and its corollary that the U.S. is energy independent. It's even worse for oil prices and the U.S. balance of payments once demand recovers. We will have to import even more oil than we do today, and it will cost more. Now, here's, I tell you what, I'm going to take a quick break so I can really kind of flesh this out. It's going to explain to you what is behind the talking point of U.S. being a net exporter. Now, again, these are, they're uncomfortable truths because they go against talking points. But that's what this show is about. So I'm not going to stop when it comes to this oil stuff, too, because I've seen through this for forever. And it took somebody from oilprice.com, an oil analyst, to really kind of flesh it out and put it in easy words to read off on air. I'll be right back.
If you're considering renovations, remodels, or roofing, call on Tri-County Restoration. Do you have an insurance claim? We work with all insurance companies. Tri-County offers kitchen and bath remodels, wood floor refinishing, patio and sunroom additions, and is a GAF-certified roofing contractor. And Tri-County Restoration can handle new construction for that home you've always dreamed of. Call Tri-County Restoration, 601-856-2530, or visit our website, tcr.ms. That's tcr.ms.
All right, final segment for the day. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. You can reach me, Mike Madison, at WYAB.com, or you can go to my new page on Gab, G-A-B.com, Gab.com, where my social media presence is now. I killed my Facebook page yesterday. I left up a notice of my transition to the few people I had. I mean, I think I had like 300 followers. I don't know. I'm sure that's probably pretty bad for anybody that's in the media, but if you don't use Facebook, you don't cultivate a real following on it, I guess. But I am at gab.com now. You can go set it up. Like I said, I turned my back on the Facebook and Silicon Valley. I don't use that G company to do any searches. I'm looking to get away from them completely. I did a whole show last week about how to de-Googlerize your life. And anyway, so I'm on gab.com. But I don't know. Can you message me there? I don't know. I could barely figure out Facebook Messenger. Social media. I think it's just a bad experiment at this point. I think it has done more damage than it's done good for us. You know, it's kind of interesting on that in watching, you know, part of this idea of Trump and his use of social media, and that's how he gets around the media. I think it's been so damaging to his presidency. It's damaging to everybody's psyche. It's damaging to the American people who get into our little social media bubbles and scream at other people, or we just reinforce our own beliefs. And that makes Trump supporters feel like Trump's invincible because they've disassociated with anybody who has any criticisms of Donald Trump. If Ann Coulter says something about Donald Trump, she's dead to me. You don't listen to them and explore them and say, yeah, okay, well, maybe that's something that Trump needs to work on or anything. No, you just say, no, she's a washed-up has-been. Same on the left. You won't listen to anything. You just get into your bubble. You just cut off anybody who disagrees with you, and then you're overconfident that Joe Biden is beloved in this country, is grandpa or old creepy Uncle Joe. But I was watching The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan thing, and it was interesting. They made a point that is just kind of a throwaway point, but it kind of struck me kind of with politics right now, how popular Michael Jordan got. And they made the point that, you know, he built this internationally recognized and beloved brand just through his accomplishments. There was no social media. Now, he got a lot of ad space. Certainly Nike took and ran with him, and he had other sponsors, and he became a well-paid spokesman for some groups. But he didn't need that. He got there on his accomplishments, and this is what Donald Trump should have done. He should have put down Twitter. I actually started to look the other day to try to figure out how many tweets Donald Trump has done and then calculate how much time does it take to create a tweet. Because, you know, you know that goes through some level of, I mean, some of them it feels like there is no oversight whatsoever. But there's at least some thought. It's not like you tweeting your buddy. You know, there's somebody sitting there that goes, I don't know, if you say that, change this word to that. Let's make sure it doesn't insinuate this. You know, if it's just 5 minutes per tweet. What are there, like 20,000 of these things? What's 20,000 five-minute segments? How much time is that that's been spent on Twitter rather than getting some things done? And the Jordan example really kind of hit me. I was like, yeah, this was at a time where you had to go out and perform to become really, really famous. It was before Twitter and the Kardashians. You just became famous because you have a big social following, all the social media influencers and the YouTubers out there who really don't do anything, but they just become known for being on social media. We would be well served to go back to a time where accomplishments is what made you famous and not your social media account. I want to finish up with this oil story because I think this is important. There's so much political pandering, talking points, just pure propaganda, BS out there on both sides of the aisle across the political landscape, and everybody just soaks it in. And I've been reading this article from Arthur Berman at oilprice.com, an oil market analyst. He knows what he's talking about. More than just somebody who goes, oh, we're energy independent. It's just like when people were saying, yeah, but manufacturing has moved back to the United States like never before, Mike. That's something. And I say, no, manufacturing activity had been slowing down. Go look at the charts of manufacturing activity in this country. It was substantially higher for many periods of time during the 2000s than it's been during the Trump presidency. Not saying Trump doesn't want to do that and that he has not been effective at getting some manufacturing back here. And given 20 years ago, I think Donald Trump could have had a profound impact on the offshoring of jobs to China. But that doesn't mean that it's a reality now. But oil independence was this other thing that I keep hearing. Well, now we're energy independent. And I've just known that's just not true. So listen to this. Again, this is from Arthur Berman, an oil market analyst with oilprice.com. He says, the idea of U.S. energy independence is ignorant at best and fraudulent at worst. The U.S. imported nearly 7 million barrels of crude per day and condensate in 2019 and more than 9 million barrels a day of crude oil and refined products. That's almost as much as China, the world's second largest economy, consumes. The U.S. is a net exporter in the same way that shale companies are making huge profits by accounting sleight of hand. The U.S. imports other people's crude oil, refines it, and then exports it. If a country imports unpainted cars, paints them green, and then exports them, is it a net exporter of cars? No, it's an exporter of green paint. And so one of the little statistics that's been massaged to make us look like we're energy independent over the last couple of years is importing a bucket load of unrefined oil at whatever it is, a barrel, refining it, and then sending it out at a higher price and calling it an American product, exporting oil to the world, oil that was never in the United States to begin with. We just processed it. And I think that that's pretty fascinating, and at least lets people kind of understand what's going on. I think that I was sitting here during the last segment. I was watching, sitting here in the beautiful city of Florida. We've got a big window that's out here that looks out to the west, and I was watching these dark clouds coming in. Really, really dark clouds, and now it's kind of let loose, and it's been raining pretty hard, but it's one of those times before the rain comes and the dark clouds are coming. I don't know if it was the campaign rally. There's plenty of reasons why the rally wasn't well attended, whether it's the polls, whether it's political advisors expressing some concern, whether it's, I don't know what it is, but I swear I feel a dark cloud on the horizon in this country right now, and it is frustrating to me that can see as nut job as the left has gone, I feel like somehow, some way, they are still going to end up on top of this thing come November. And as I said, the worst fears of Republicans may be realized if something doesn't change, and change fast. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.